Non-local. Part 2. The Mosquitoes. Morning after Brick disappeared proved to be a rather pleasant one for Sunshine, because there were pancakes involved. Sunshine's mother had made a large stack of sourdough pancakes from a starter that had been in the family for 3 generations. She kept the starter in a jar, which she kissed every time she used. The jar was set in a place of pride in the kitchen, in between the honey crock and salt cellar, where it stood out quite nicely. Sourdough pancake mornings were the best mornings in the Mosquito House. This one also had bacon. "Ready for some pancakes, Sunshine?" his mother, Ann Mosquito, asked him as he was coming down the stairs dressed for school in his favorite sweater, which had been seasoned a little from yesterday's excitement. He had, however, donned a new pair of amazing black and red pants, which were so puffy it looked as if he was wearing a ballroom gown with clean rows of metal clasps up the sides and zippers frothing in waves of excitement from the inseams. Smiling as large as the money would allow, Sunshine could not muster anything more than, "Uh-huh," as he sat at the table and went headlong into a plate of steaming hot pancakes. Sunshine was the youngest of 3 boys, and the only one who still lived at home, but since he was only a junior in high school, his 2 older brothers forgave him the inadequacy. His mother was born and raised in Anchorage to a half-Tlingit mother and Norwegian father. Her family had always lived in Spinard. In fact, it was her parents' house that the Mosquitoes had moved into when Sunshine was in diapers. Her father had long been retired in Seattle, where he was closer to better medical care and his wife's family. Sunshine's father, Reggie Mosquito Jr., was Haida and grew up in Ketchikan, where all his family still lives. Sometimes Sunshine would get sent down to Ketchikan in the summers to be with his grandpa, who was the only one in Sunshine's life who never once made fun of the way Sunshine dressed or wore his hair. Sunshine liked being with his grandpa. They would go out fishing in the ocean on his boat, and when they were there, a mile or two out at sea, his grandpa would break out an impressive spread of food he stored away in a backpack, with pilot bread, cheese, and some of the jellies his grandma would make every summer. His favorites were blueberry and salmonberry. The cheese was always good, too. Reggie Sr. was a bit of a fromage aficionado. Sometimes Sunshine would play his favorite Alaskan death metal music for his grandpa, who always seemed to laugh, no matter how hard or dark or serious the music would be. "Can't really make out what they're saying, Sunshine, but are they singing in Haida?" his grandpa asked him one day. "They are." "Well, turn it up. I think it'll help us catch more fish. Maybe they'll be attracted to the heavy metals and need to dance. Any fish that dances to this music will be very good to eat. That's what I think." Sunshine was laughing and turned the music up as loud as he'd get on his dinky little MP3 player, which is not very loud at all. In fact, they had to go inside the boat and close the door just to hear the music. If fish were attracted to the sound level of that music, they possessed an unnatural sense of hearing. Reggie Jr. worked as a counselor at the Consortium Initiative in Anchorage, where he met his wife, who worked there as a lawyer. They were a happy family and gave money every year to NPR and the First Alaskans Group. They kept traditional Alaskan native foodstuffs like seal oil on their table and smoked their own salmon, which they always gave as a present to older people in the neighborhood. Reggie spoke as much Haida as he could with his children as they grew up, and Ann was keen on storytelling and always had music playing in the house. She was particularly fond of Mongolian folk music, which he played quite regularly during Sunshine's childhood. It helped to fuel an obsession of his with Mongolian culture. "You know, Mongolians invented cheese," Reggie Sr. said to Sunshine one summer. "As the saying goes, it wasn't so much that they invented it, it was that they ate it." "What do you mean?" Sunshine asked him. "You see, Sunshine, my boy, the Mongolians were horse people. Some people say the first horse people. Anyways, they lived on steppes, the way some of our ancestors lived on the tundra. It was flat and cold, and the plants didn't grow high. They grow low into the ground, where animals like to eat them. Sometimes, they also like to eat them, too. But mostly, we like to eat the animals. And just like we use all the parts of the animals, so did they. They would use stomachs to carry water and milk. Well, inside of stomachs, there's this enzyme called rennet. When it comes into contact with milk, it begins to curdle it. This is where cheese comes from. Some horsemen, thousands of years ago, poured fresh milk into a stomach skin and rode around all day, jostling the milk in a tiny bit of rennet. At the end of the day, he went to get him a drink of milk, but none came out. The thing they say is not that he accidentally made cheese one day. It's that when he saw a skin full of warm cottage cheese-looking goo, he put his hand and took him a big old bite. As Reggie Sr., imitating warm cottage cheese goo, eating it with his hands with a lot of slurping gusto, he continued, "It's like anything. Someone had to figure out how it works. It's cheese or grinding flour that chickens lay eggs that taste pretty good when you leave them in boiling water. Humans were always figuring things out. Someone figured out if you drag a barbed bit of bone strapped to a piece of cedar on the bottom of the ocean, sometimes you catch a halibut, and they taste pretty good too." "And bacon," Sunshine added, his enthusiasm springing through. "Well, whoever figured out bacon is in trouble." And with that, Reggie Sr. sustained a good, long laugh. He liked bacon that much, too. Sunshine's brothers, Clifton and Tyga, both lived in Anchorage. Clifton, the oldest, was a counselor like their father, but at the treatment center downtown in Earthquake Park, with many of the transients that came through Anchorage. He was also a wood enthusiast. He would harpy carve with a chainsaw in his front yard. Clifton was trying to teach himself how to carve in the traditional Haida style. His goal was to ship up some seasoned logs from totem poles from Haida Gwaii. He was still single, so his brothers would tease him every given opportunity that he would sculpt outside with his shirt off to try and attract ladies. But it never worked because he looked like a little girl with his shirt off. These teases would always hurt the ears of Ann Mosquito, who could not understand why such sweet little boys like Clifton and Tyga could not find a wife, and didn't like to hear her other sons making fun of Clifton for it. "It's because of your skinny-ass man titties, Cliff. Your nipples are just way too big," Tyga would inform him, Sunshine laughing and losing his breath, wishing he could insult at that level of professionalism. "If I were you, I'd to draw an accurate picture of you, Cliff. I would have to start with the nipples and work backwards." Tyga, the middle child, had been back from culinary school in Portland, Oregon, for 3 years now, and had worked in several kitchens around Anchorage, which, with the exploding food culture of the day, made Anchorage a hotspot for several up-and-coming international chefs to spend a few years in. Eating seal meat and using tundra herbs, Tyga's personal passion was growing mushrooms, fungi, and edible protists during the winter in Alaska. He had developed some recipes using a fungus popular in Europe for creating vegetarian meat alternatives. Tyga Mosquito owned a food business that made vegan versions of traditional Alaskan cuisine, walrus, bowhead, beluga, moose, caribou, seal, and even salmon. His newer vegetarian alternative recipes, which recently got him a good bit of critical exposure in foodie circles, went to a more daring artistic place. When he made meat alternatives for two extinct early Beringian subsistence foods, woolly mammoth and stellar sea cow. He was currently working on a Muir egg alternative that would turn blue and red the way real Muir eggs do when they're cooked. "Sorry, Ty. Didn't mean for my nipples to be that big. Maybe if I paired them with a set of love handles like you got, I'd be better with all them mushrooms you've been spending so much time with." Cliff was just as sharp. "Laugh it up, Dignut. Going out with a couple of mushrooms tonight, and we're going to make some soup, Clifton. A wonderful mushroom soup. There's going to be cream and everything. We're going to make the most delicious soup ever." "Yeah, well, fuck you too, baby, you silly fat ass." All three of the boys were laughing pretty hard by now, some snortling too, leaving their mother wishing she had birthed at least one sweet girl instead of three boys who preferred a well-placed insult over an I love you. Sunshine was thinking about Tyga's vegan cuisine while he was finishing up the sourdough pancakes his mother made, trying to imagine the meat versions of vegetable dishes, as that was even the opposite of a meat alternative. "Is Ty coming over this weekend, Mom?" "He said he was. It is his birthday. We're supposed to have a family dinner on Sunday. He said he wanted to talk to us about something big." His mother was getting distracted, getting ready for work. "You almost ready?" "Thought Dad was taking me," with a mouthful of pancakes. "He had to leave early. They were filming some reality thing again. Got ceramics after school again today?" She was putting her earrings on, a cue that Sunshine was in countdown mode to leaving. "Should have." Sunshine was eating a little faster and put his thumbs through his still aggregately cruddy sleeves on his favorite hooded sweatshirt. He stayed after school for open studio in the ceramics lab where Amanda Pete would make pottery. He really liked Amanda Pete's pottery. In the pottery lab that day, Sunshine wanted to make another ceramic oosik. He decided to sit at a table where he could see Amanda work on a familiar project. He thought that he could go back and dig the old one out of the snow, but he didn't want to return to where Brick had disappeared. After that horrible show with the other kids, none of whom showed up for school that day, All he had been thinking about was Brick, trying to remember the exact nature of their relationship. It was definitely his mother's side of the family, all those crazy white fishermen from Seattle. He was thinking that maybe he hadn't really overreacted to Brick disappearing into the ether because of video games. That maybe he's become desensitized because he plays too many video games and they're all the first-person shooters and all the magical thinking stuff. People disappear and reappear all the time in video games. People have multiple lives. They can get extras, too. One wants to disappear and reappear somewhere else or on a new level or something. You making another walrus cock? The art teacher was an older hippie. Because it looks to me like you're making another walrus cock, son. They're called oosics, Sunshine said, trying not to smile too much at the cussing teacher. He loved it. So says your people. We just call them walrus dicks. The teacher was jingling the keys and change in his jean pockets and kicking at some half-hard clay pieces on the floor with his sock and sandals as he walked around the room. He was very proud of his automatic wit with teenagers, always able to catch them off guard, and the kids liked him because he swore a good bit and always smelled like marijuana. Mr. Collins was actually a bit of a joke around Spinard High School. Carry on, Sunshine. You make your family proud. Somewhat nervously, he continued to make his family proud by hand-building another useless ceramic oosik.